everyone. Welcome to today's episode of Radio and Youth Podcast, produced by Youth for Environmental Education and Development Foundation, YFEED Foundation. It's me, Preeti Thakur, the host for today's episode. Likely to our previous episodes, we have come up with a new topic of discussion for today. In today's episode, we are going to talk on the importance of climate change education. We have been experiencing and hearing a lot about climate change and its related other issues going all around the world. But still, there is a huge challenge to incorporate them in our day-to-day livelihoods. Considering the emergency of the present day situation resulted due to the changing climatic condition, it's high time we start taking action before it's too late. I believe that climate education is an effective measure to bring more innovative and effective ideas and action to combat the rising threat and growing challenges. We will have much discussion on this issue and this topic in our conversations ahead. So moving ahead, in our today's episode, we have a wonderful couple of change makers and climate activists as our guest speakers. We have Ms. Heeta Lakhani and Mr. Maxine Almeida as our guest speakers for today. A warm welcome to both of you, Heeta and Maxine, in our episode today.
Hi, Preeti.
Thank you, Preeti.
Hello. Hello to both of you. I guess amongst our listeners today, we have many might have none, both of you, and many might not have none. So let's begin with a quick round of introduction to both of you. Tell us about what you guys are up to these days and how has the journey been for you guys in this sector?
Hi, everyone. Like Preeti mentioned, I am Heeta, based in India. I'm doing a few different things. One of them is climate change education. I have been part of the UN climate change process, the negotiations, since 2015. And I'm also currently the global focal point for the youth constituency within the UNFCCC. This is called YANGO. And as I engage more within the UN system, the drastic lack of climate education in my country, in India, was visible more and more to me. And this is one of the main reasons why I work in climate education today.
Thank you, Preeti. It's lovely to be here on today's episode. Hi, everyone. I'm Maxine. I'm from India. And I am currently the executive secretary of Don Bosco Green Alliance. For those of you who don't know, the Don Bosco or the Salesians have a large network of educational institutions around the world. And the Don Bosco Green Alliance is tasked with bringing together all Salesian institutions onto a common platform for environmental action. And one of the ways we do action is through environmental education. I have also worked on environmental education in schools in the city of Mumbai. And I really look forward to our conversation today.
Oh, thank you so much for giving us your time. And all of us are looking ahead to hear from both of you. I really feel motivated after hearing from the both of you. I'm sure that the long-term dedication and hard work by the both of you has brought both of you guys here at the point where you are today. And our best wishes to achieve all that you have dreamt of in the days ahead as well. So entering in our topic of discussion today, for me, like, climate change is not just a single term, it's not just a single topic of discussion. It incorporates many, many other different topics under it. It's like the umbrella term that incorporates a divergent other topics under it. So climate education is also one of the topics that lies under the broad topic of climate change. And you guys have chosen climate education as your career subject for now. So what is the reason behind that you guys have chosen climate education as your career amongst the all other subject matters? What is that trigger point or the motivation that you have for working in this sector?
Yeah, okay. I started engaging within the UNFCCC framework within the youth constituency since 2015 at COP21 in Paris. This was where the Paris Agreement was signed. This was the first time I had been to an international conference, and I had absolutely no idea of what was going on. And as I continued engaging, I became a part of YANGO the next year. And as I continued engaging with other young people, There were a few facts that were sort of glaring to me. One was that we have a lack of young people from India, or at least from the South Asia region who were there. There were a few, not that there weren't any, but it was a much smaller number compared to our population, compared to the amount of youth that we have. It was a very, very handpicked, you know, number of young people. And there was an even smaller number of young people from the region that would engage on a daily basis or on a continuous basis within the youth constituency. So this was something that I kept questioning, saying, how come we don't have more young people here? And on the other side, the answer was very obvious to me, was because we don't have the kind of education, the kind of awareness. Well, now in today's time, it's very different. Youth are speaking. There are so many youths active from across the country, also from the region, which is amazing. But back in 2015 and 2016, this was not the case. There were just like very few youth networks or movements who were part of this climate space in general, especially from India. And this basically kept coming back to me, and I realized that if our young people are not empowered enough to take action, which basically they're not empowered enough with knowledge, there's no way they're going to be able to take any action. There's no way they're going to be able to engage. And I had just graduated from a master's in environmental studies, and still the entire process was very, very new to me. It was quite overwhelming. And this kept blaring back. And I think this was my biggest motivation to work in climate education.
Okay, that's really motivating. Like, your story is also kind of motivating me to work further in these sectors over again. How about you, Maxine? Like, what triggered you to join climate education as a career subject?
Well, thanks, Preeti. So similarly, just like Hita, somewhere in 2015 is when I started working in this space. And for me, the motivation also comes from the fact that the lack of awareness that was existent at that time, around 6 years ago, in terms of climate change, especially amongst the young people in India. Just like we see the number of conversations happening around the world, and again in India as well, with so many different youth movements. Especially for climate change, like Fridays for Future, that I recollect at the moment. We did not have that at that time. And for me, when I used to go to schools and talk to children about environment and why it's important, the reason I decided to stick with this field is also because for us, when I was in school, environmental education was a time pass topic. It was a time pass subject. It was just a subject to get marks for, and nobody took it seriously. But to me, it is one of the most important subjects that we could really need to give a lot of importance to, especially I think that environmental education, and not just climate education, but environmental education needs to start from a very young age. And that is something that is needed at the moment for all of us. And that's one of the reasons that I continue working in this field.
Yeah, surely, like, the stories from the both of you is surely going to motivate me and some others who are working in this sector as well, like in my context as well. The time when I started back 3 years behind, like the time then and the time now, the sectors of climate education has been changed a lot, like as you said. Many people have now been engaged in this sector, and many people are showing their interest to do something and come ahead to overcome this challenge, like in a different way, with more creative and more innovative ideas. And we hope that these continuous effort will grow more and more every single day in the days ahead, so that we can combat this challenge as soon as possible and we come to a very beautiful life in our days ahead. As a generation, we create a beautiful environment for the generation behind us as well. So somewhere I heard that you guys have a story behind how you met, and it's climate education which connected the both of you. So if any of you can share us about that as well, we would love to hear the story behind that.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Preeti. So we met at a sustainability event in Mumbai, and Hita, I'm not really good with recollecting stories. Please do chip in if I get some wrong details. But I remember, I think it was in 2017, I think, yeah, that we met at a sustainability event, and I was there because there was a talk that was on a topic, I don't recollect right now, I think it was on biomimicry, I'm not really sure, and I was there at that talk, and it was a nice place. We could network with people, there were quite a different people there, and it was organized by a friend, a very dear friend. So it was also a good chance to catch up with her. And while after the talk, after the event talk was over, Atishi was introducing us to different people we could network with. And I think Heeta at that time was also looking into getting into the meeting new people with regards to climate change education. And since I was working with Don Bosco at that time, and especially in environmental education, I think a common friend introduced the two of us. That's what I remember.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. I've never heard the story from your point of view. Yeah, I think that's what it was. We were at this event and I was looking for someone who works in the field of climate education, because at that point I hadn't yet started. I was still figuring out what to do, what's currently happening, how do people engage, etc., etc. I had a whole bunch, like I had a list of questions. And this friend that Max was talking about was a classmate of mine from Masters. And I didn't know she would be there. I just happened to go to the event because I got an email from a listserv. And I saw her there and I was like, oh, so that was quite coincidental. And she said, oh, you were looking to work in education. Why don't you speak to Maxim? And that was basically how we met. We kept in touch, I think, met a few times to discuss about work. And then, yeah, that's just how things started.
Yeah, so that's really cute. That's really sweet and interesting as well. Like, thank you for sharing your beautiful story to all of us from hearing you in the earlier conversation as well. Both of you guys have come up a long journey working in the sectors of climate education, both individually and working together as well. I'm sure that it has not been easy, like we say or we think of. Generally, there is a perception like it must have been very easy because it's just a simple thing and it's very easy to kick off these things to happen. So since I have been working in this sector for a long time, I feel it is quite a challenging job to work in this and stick in for a long time period like you guys have been doing. So you guys also must have come along with numerous challenges and obstacles on your way. So what are the major challenges that you have faced and how did you overcome them in your journey?
Yeah, this is interesting. Of course, it hasn't been a smooth ride throughout. For me, because I was starting from scratch, I wasn't part of an organization. I was basically trying to figure my way around by myself. It was very hard for me first to get to the right audience, which is whether it's a school, whether it's an institution, basically anyone who works with kids in general. So I went through anybody who could recommend me. So for example, I went back to my school to try and get something, to try and do a little workshop. I went asking around. So a friend's father took me to his school where he had studied. So that's basically how I started. And I was accompanied, it was me and a friend of mine who was a company psychologist, and the two of us were like trying to find our way together with this. And there was a lot of hesitance, right? Like, because if you did a one-off session, the schools would be like, okay, fine, come speak and go. But if you wanted anything a little more substantive, if you expected to even get some sort of payment out of all the time and effort that you're putting in, there would clearly be a sort of dead end where they'd be like, no, I'm sorry, wait, this is not something we're going to pay, or this is not something that we have time for. We have academics and curriculum to finish. And rightfully so. Schools also have their own pressure. They have their own agendas. And yeah, I mean, it's not the easiest. So I think the first initial challenges for me were to try and reach the right audience. I did multiple different avenues, whether it was schools, whether it was just pitching to institutions, whether it was taking sessions at fairs at basically local areas, at a children's museum, basically wherever I could get an audience of kids in front of me. Well, everything that we did was out of our own volunteer time. So it was something that took a lot of resources to go into. We also did a crowdfunding campaign to ensure that this sort of happened. And then we slowly built up through that. So I think that was quite a nice learning curve in that sense.
Yeah, surely. Like, since I've also been engaged in the portion of awareness related to climate education, we do go to schools to approach, like, give us some time that we could interact with the children, we could talk to them, we could hear their voices, like, what they really think about and what is happening, what they are seeing, what they want, what they can do from their side. We keep on trying to do that in our area, in our communities as well, but it's quite challenging to convince the people. Like, how essential is it? Like, people say that the teachers or the elderly ones say that it's not the right time to discuss it. The children are too small to understand this issue, but I believe that they are not too small to understand. If we convince them in a better way, we can surely make them understand about the happening. Maxim, what do you have to say on this? Like, what are the challenges that you have faced and how did you overcome them?
Yes, Preeti, I would like to emphasize what you just mentioned is teachers saying that the children are too young. I don't think they are too young. I think it's right. Always nice to start off this. Yeah, it's always good to start off this early, this whole connect with nature. I think that's what we really miss here. And that's the reason why we start going away from nature. I read recently somewhere that the first barrier to thinking about caring for nature comes when we start telling our children that playing outside or playing in the mud is bad. That's the kind of barrier that we create, and that anything outside are the confines of the four walls, anything that makes you go play in the mud, makes you go dirty is bad, and it's not. That's bad and dangerous, and that's the first disconnect we have with nature. And I am pretty sure our parents, our grandparents, that's all the play that they ever had was going outside and playing in nature. And right. that's something that we are missing, and we all know the kind of benefits that playing outside has, and apart from, you know, forming a connection and a bond with nature. With regards to challenges, I believe that some of the challenges that I faced were not quite the same as what Heeta or you faced, Preeti, because we already had a set understanding with the schools, in the sense that we used to go to schools thrice a year and have conduct three sessions. So we had 50 schools, so that was 150 sessions every year, and we took a particular theme or topic. However, having said, despite that, despite being able to go to the schools three times a year, there were challenges. So not all 50 schools, gave us the dates to visit them. And also, yes, teachers are burdened, and sometimes, you know, they are just being thrust upon this responsibility that you handle the environmental club. So, you know, apart from the academic duties, they are also given academic responsibilities. They are also given the responsibility of handling the environmental club. And there have been instances wherein the teachers are not interested, the management is not interested, but the students are really interested. However, there are students, how much can they do? They have to work within a certain system of the school. So even though we had students reaching out to us saying that, we really like this topic, could we do something about it? We really could not do anything because we had a strict policy that any interaction with the students will only go through the teachers. That was something that we had to do because we were working with underage kids, you know, so we had to have that level, and because we were going through the school, so we had to follow certain rules. However, what really worked, there were certain schools that were really amazing, and we also had a competition where the schools would be graded on and how well they performed throughout the year, and they were evaluated. So some schools really could. What I observed was that when the management, the teacher and the students were equally passionate, those are the schools that performed the best or had an amazing set of. There were certain schools which had an entire environmental policy for their school, and that entire environmental policy was done with inputs from the children of the school, not the teachers or the principal or the management. But the children sat down and found out. Imagine what kind of an experience that is to formulate your own school's environmental policy, to decide how do we manage waste, how do we manage water, how do we manage our food. That would have been an amazing experience for the students. So, there were some challenges, but this was one positive story that I would like to share here.
Yeah, so I think it has been a very interesting journey for you to interact with the children directly. Like, since Heeta and I, like, we share a common problem that we are not really engaged, or we do not have easy access to communicate with the young people or the children, as you had that opportunity. And I hope that in the days ahead as well, you will be able to engage more children and more young people in your program in the days ahead as well. So as you, both of you, have been talking that you have been engaged working with children and young people, what do you think about the participation of youth and young people in these sectors? Are the upcoming generation really interested to work on this or not? Like, what do you see? Like, how does the reaction come from the children and the young people you interact with? Are they seem to be interested to working in this sector or not?
Well, at the moment, yes, if you look, there is a lot of buzz, there is a lot of talk about these issues, especially, I'm not sure about climate education, But yes, about being aware of what they, and everyone can see it, right? I mean, last week and current in this week as well, we know what has happened all over the world. Climate change is a topic that has been discussed about everywhere. Whether people are denying it or accepting it, that's a different question altogether, but it's happening. So yes, young people are talking about it. And however, the issue is not enough of them are interested. There is a certain number interested, but not enough. And there's also that is something that we need to really look at is how can we get more people to talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, I think from my point of view, it's a little different. At least the children that I've been speaking with, there is an interest to a certain level. There is also an awareness. They do know what is happening. The problem comes in because they don't know what to do. I think there is no connection of dots between what can we do as individuals, as children, to be a part of the solution. And this is why I think it leads to a lot of, at least kids, a lot of kids not taking action because they are so overwhelmed by the problem and they do understand what's happening. And the more you explain to them, the more they connect the dot between everything that's going on, either locally or internationally, or even with general weather patterns going amiss. They do, because while they do understand what's going on, they still feel like this is such a big problem, you know, by you or me doing something, it's not going to be enough. And what can I as a child do? And this is why I think it leads to a lot of inaction, because then you just happen to push it away and sort of continue with school or whatever else you're doing with your life. And this is also the same issue with a lot of adults as well. And like Maxine rightfully said, there are not enough people speaking about it, which is true. But at the same time, the people who are aware are not actively engaging because we haven't been able to successfully tell them these are very actionable things that you can do beyond just switching off the light or beyond ensuring that you're not leaving your tap running. There has to be something more than just that. And that is precisely what I'm trying to help figure and also help explain that while individual action is very important to ensure that your life itself is not very, very high, I don't know, intensive in terms of water or carbon or whatever you want to calculate it. At the same time, it's not just individual action which is going to solve the issue.
Right.
So there is a mix that we have to work and also convey to the audience. And I think this is where everyone working in the field of climate education, this is the biggest challenge that we face. How do we sort of make this information available and also help people make these changes in their lives?
Right. So like, absolutely, like both of you said the right point, and I have a mixed emotions of both of you. Like, I believe that the numbers of youth working in the sectors of climate change or climate education is increasing up day by day. But as you mentioned, these days, the education is primarily only the theoretical based or the background basis. Like, people are getting aware on what is happening, what is going all around and why it is happening or something like that. But they're not really known about like what is need to be done or how can they help us. As you said, like, there are times when people are offended, like they can't do anything, like their one single action cannot make a big difference. Why should they be spending time on this? And there are times when people are like, no, every small things matter and I need to do this, it's my responsibility. So there is a kind of mixed emotion in the society, in the communities when we go around there and look and interact with them. So we hope that in the future, many more people are aware and they are more engaged with more bolder actions to combat this challenge sooner in the days ahead. So as we were talking, like in comparison to the past days, the present day scenario is something different because there is a lot more of engagement, there's a lot more of awareness. So going on this basic trajectory, what do you think, like how would the future scenario would be in the sectors of climate education? Like how is it going to change or it is going to stay the same? What do you think about that? Like how would the future would be in this sector?
I definitely think climate education is the way to go. It might look a little different in basically how it's being done, but I think it's still, there is so much work to be done in this field. While at least in India, we do have environmental education, I think that doesn't, or environmental science, it really doesn't cover the gaps and needs that we need to prepare the generations with. And it does not talk about a lot of the different aspects. It does not talk about action in the way it should be. And like Maxine said previously, right? Like it's basically something that you would do just to get higher marks in school or something just to pass. And I think the entire attitude needs to change. And this has to also change with training the teachers adequately. Sometimes the teachers do not have necessarily a background in the field and they're just, you know, made to teach this subject because, yeah, I mean, there's nobody else to do it.
And I think this also, the whole approach of how it's taught needs to change. You need to train, you need to ensure that your teachers have enough knowledge to be able to teach this with a certain amount of urgency, but with a certain amount of balance without scaring the children. Actually lead them, you know, there's a lot of need for beyond education to move into mentorship programs, training programs, where these children can then become action-oriented and not just sit with the amount of knowledge that they're getting in school. So this has to transform into action, otherwise the knowledge is really not useful in that sense.
How about you, Malcolm?
Future of primary education, I think what really needs to look at, as Sita said, that we have to train the teachers. I think the first teachers of a child are the parents. So I think, and children look at parents and emulate them, right? They copy what the parents do. So if we as citizens can pass on that, and by example, like, what is education after all? We just said we have made it commercialized. We send children to a school to get educated. But if you look at our ancient cultures, education always began at home, and education is something that happens at every moment of your life, right? So that is something that I think we need to incorporate, is every moment of your life you're getting educated, and we have to realize this, that everything that we do on planet Earth is something that is going to affect us and the future generations. So the choices that we make today are going to affect our children and the children after them. So are we willing to take that risk by making bad choices? So, and when it comes to, and if you're talking about formal education, then what Hita mentioned is correct. We need to train teachers because sometimes there's a lack of capacity and understanding of the subject. Sometimes teachers are just given the assignment because there's nobody else to do it. So yes, formal education, those things need to be done, and the subject needs to be given more weightage in terms of how important it is, and more practical knowledge, and also more job opportunities so that people take the subject seriously. And actually, we could probably also look at green jobs and green skills, because as more and more, if you're looking at green our economy, if the economy becomes green, to maintain that, we'd also require skilled labor. And that's something that we could also look at in the future, yeah.
Yeah, so absolutely right. Like, there is a lot of needs of improvements and a lot of changes in the systems and the behaviors of the people as well. Like, it's high time people change their perception and the lens through which they see climate education or the climate change itself. Like, people are aware about climate change, but they do not realize the fact, like, how can that be a serious issue in the future days ahead? They are being at the present moment. I see a lot of people being ignorant, like, though they are, despite of their knowledge on the climate change is happening, it can have a serious impact on the lives and livelihoods. People are being ignorant about their own actions. So I think it's high time, like, as you said, a parent or the family members themselves, the elder ones or the senior ones, are to be aware and should be engaged in these sectors to aware the younger generation so that they come up with good habits, they come up with good actions to combat this challenge. Because every small bit and inches matter, does make a big matter in the sectors of climate education. So talking a lot of gaps, and there's a lot of challenges to achieve and ensure climate education for all. What do you think, like, what can be done or what needs to be done to incorporate climate education in our day-to-day lives, and what is needs to be done to ensure climate education for all? Because at the present moment, we see that climate change or climate education is only the topic of issue for the ones who are working in the sectors of environment or something related to biodiversity, or who are working in the sectors of conservation. The other ones who are working in the sectors of economics, business, management, or humanities, they are not seeing much concern about this issue. So what do you think is to be done to ensure climate education for everyone who is living around us? So what can be done for that?
Yeah, so I think it also ultimately it comes down to choices. If you're talking at a personal level, then as I said earlier, that the choices that we make is something that we pass on to our little ones, and they will see what we do. And when I say little ones, I don't only mean children, but also even your own children, but also other young people in front of you. And you could lead by example by your own choices. With regards to the more state level or national level, I think what we need are policies that incorporate climate change education in the syllabus, not just theoretical, but in a very practical manner and in a very engaging manner, and not in a very boring, because we are looking at, you know, starting from a very young age, then yes, we need to make it more engaging, we need to make it more interesting, so that we develop that knowledge from children and in young people from a very young age, that okay, is a topic that is important, and not only for the career, but also for the future of the planet. And that is something that could only come through state intervention, through policies.
Right. How about you? What do you think? Like, how can we incorporate them?
Yeah, I think this is similar, right? Like, I mean, it has to be a systemic change. So like Matson said, you have to realize that this is something that is happening. It's not going to happen in the next 50 years, 100 years, whatever. It is happening today and it is affecting lives. And I think people are slowly starting to realize this, especially since we've had the heat waves in North America, the floods in Europe and China. People are noticing that this is a pattern that is happening across the world. And there's no country that's really spared from this for a long time. So, systemic change is exactly what we need. We have to realize that the way we're functioning today, our mode of development is not leading us into a safer world. It's not leading us to a greener world. And we have to start right from each of us as consumers, and also demand change from policymakers, demand change from lawmakers, from the corporates, from basically people who have this power in their hands, people in positions of power who can make these larger amount of change. But I think it's simple economics. So if there is a large demand of something else, suppliers will have to change. If we really push for things that we want, whether it's the way that packaging material is used, whether it's anything else, it's a two-way street, and I think we can't just keep waiting for someone else to wake up and do it. And I think we're seeing that more and more today.
Yeah, so surely like the system change is the major thing that we need for the present day situation to change and to incorporate climate education and climate change awareness in the communities in our surroundings. Like in context of Nepal as well, we see like previously the climate change was only included in the higher level syllabus courses only, but this time in the NTC, the Nepal government has mentioned it to include in the secondary levels of education. And I hope that this progress continues to include the climate change education in the primary levels as well, because since as we were talking, like it's really very important to aware the children from the very early age so that they develop their behaviors and attitudes in a similar manner so that they can come up with better actions to combat this challenge in the days ahead. So talking in a similar manner, since we are talking more on children and youth, generally the voices of children and youth are ignored, being said that they are the young ones. They are not mature enough to speak on this. They are not capable enough to take the decisions for themselves. So what do you think about that? Like, what are the lessons or the takeaways that you have taken from your engagement with children and youth for the long time now?
I think the biggest lessons that I have learned is that, number one, at least today, nowadays, children don't need to be taught about climate change, or even youth. They already know what is happening. What we do need is to connect the dots, help them take action. What we do need is a little bit more of mentorship than just education, or education basically helping them connect the dots through education, but then also leading towards very actionable points. The other lessons that I've learned is that if this is something which is a big issue, which you basically make it sound that it is happening far away from you, if you talk about ice caps melting, polar bears dying, people are not going to relate to it. If you talk about things happening locally that they can relate with, they will take action. But it's very hard for someone to get inspired to take action just because the Antarctic ice shelf, you know, is melting at a faster rate than it should be. So, we have to make it relatable. We have to make it understandable. And at the same time, I think there's also a lot of inertia amongst all of us, not just children, not just adults, amongst all of us. And I think it's a little bit more in adults, where because change is not the easiest thing, we have gotten set in our ways. We like our comforts. We're used to the lifestyle that we're living in, and change is usually not the most easiest solution, especially individual change is not the most easiest solution. It's very easy to point fingers and say, you know, this one should do, this one, that one should do. But it's very different when you say, how can I change my own life? And how can I change my way of thinking to ensure that we're all moving towards a safer planet, a more just planet? I think this is what we have to keep trying. Progress is not easy, but each of us have to keep pushing ourselves internally. Also, there are so many different aspects when you talk about climate change. One is, of course, the whole development carbon emissions. But there is the whole aspect of justice, right? Because there is a part of the world that is privileged, and not just developed or developing countries, but even within countries, which is within my own country of India, we see this, where there is privilege, and then there's a whole section which is not so privileged, which is basically suffering the brunt. And it's not easy to internalize this, and it's not easy to accept that, you know, this is happening, and you've possibly in the past been a contributor to this disparity. So I think this is what all of us, it's a work in progress for each of us, but I just wish to like tell people to keep pushing yourselves, and hopefully we're all changing for the better.
Yeah, so yeah, we need to keep pushing our voices and our actions for the beautiful tomorrow. How about you, Max, and what are the lessons that you have learned through your engagement with young people and children?
Yes, thanks, Preeti. I think, Preeti, for me, what's important, and this is something that I've always believed in, is youth and children today just need to show them the right direction. And sometimes, maybe not even that, sometimes you just need to point them and say that maybe this is the wrong direction. They will find the right direction on their own. And whenever I've taken trainings or workshops that I talk to them about climate change or the environmental crisis that we are facing, and you could really see, and at the end of the workshop, I usually have a reflection moment with the participants, and you could really see some of them being moved by what is happening. And they later on, they come to me, like, for example, one of them, and it was a very, very small incident in one of the workshops. I was talking about consumption and how we are in this whole culture of buying a new phone or a new gadget every year. And I just gave an example that I've been using my headphones for the last 1 year. And one of them, because one set of headphones got damaged, I still continue using just one. They were the 2 in-ear ones, right? You have two. So if one gets damaged, you still continue using the other one. So I just mentioned that, you know what, it's not important for me to buy a new one. I just said that, why not continue with this one? And I remember a couple of days later, some of the participants followed me on Instagram, and one of them just texted me on Instagram saying, sir, I also damaged my headphones, but what I did was, instead of buying a new one, I went to the shop and I got this one repaired. And this, I know it's a very small example. This is what, again, coming back to what I said earlier, right? You have to start showing them examples, and you have to lead by your own personal example. And this is something that is, of course, there are a set of students who really don't, or a set of participants who really are like, say that, you know, what is this guy talking about? And this is boring, and this is not something that we are interested in, and we want to give us something else. But a certain group of people are really interested, and those that person, we are still in touch, and he's now leading a young group in his church for environmental-related issues. They are from the city of Vadodara in India. So to answer your question, I think that's what we have to do, is show them the right direction. Sometimes not even the right direction, just show them this is not the right one. And just act as enablers and give them the tools, the knowledge, and they will find out solutions on their own. We don't need to tell them everything.
Yeah, so that's really big up to say, but like, that's a small deal, like you, as I mentioned, that's not just a small deal that you did, like, it's making a big difference. Like, you taught one, that one person can teach another one person, and that could create a ripple effect in the community later on as well. That's a really big appreciable job that you did. I hope that I would also be possibly doing something good for the communities in the days ahead, like you did. So, since we are at the very end of the podcast, is there anything that you would like to say at the end of the podcast? Any messages, any recommendations, any suggestions that you have from the both of you?
The only thing I would like to say is that we're in this for the long run. Like everyone, not just Max and me, but all of us working in the field, whether that's you, Preeti, or anyone else who's listening. Whether you're professionally engaged in this or not doesn't really matter. this is something that really is cross-cutting across all streams, across all walks of life, across everything you do. And I think in order to be able to take action for the next few years at least, we have to imagine this as a marathon and not just a sprint. We need to be prepared. We need to start working and continue working. This is the important bit. We can't expect to work for a few days or a few months and then say, oh my God, you know, there's nothing changing and I'm like going back. At the same time, it can get very exhausting because sometimes you don't see change.
Right.
And I think it is important for each one of us individuals to take care of ourselves, take care of each other, to build this community. Whether it's our own mental health, physical health, whatever that might be, we have to look after ourselves because we're in this for the long run. But this is not something you do because it's fun and then you can move, change hobbies or pick up a new activity. But this is something that matters each of our lives. This is something that is concerning not the planet. The planet will be fine. This is about humanity as a whole. And we need to make sure that we're part of the change, but we're also taking care of ourselves through it all.
Right. How about you, Max? And anything that you would like to say before we end the session today?
Yeah, sure. First of all, thank you for bringing us on the show. It's lovely to be here. And thank you for putting this together and giving us a platform to discuss this very important topic of climate change education. To me, what's important is, as young people, we need to first inform ourselves and not keep the knowledge to ourselves only and say, okay, I am doing everything I can. And it's up to each individual person's responsibility to figure it out on their own. No, I think for what's important is that we, whatever knowledge we get, and we have to share it. And we have to, again, of course, apart from leading with example, we have to share it with as many people as we come across, whether in terms of however you want to share it. There are so many different platforms available. There is social media, there's YouTube. You can create your podcast as well. So, you know, the idea is that we do not keep quiet. We go make some noise and we engage with as many valid audiences as possible.
Yeah, so thank you so much. It was really informative to know the stories of your working in this sector. I sometimes get a lot, like I create a distress sometimes hearing some suggestions or recommendations from people, like it's useless talking about this. We are not having such issue going around. Why are you talking about this? Despite of the fact that people are known about what is happening in the surrounding, what is going all around the world, it's quite hard to convince them. But as you said, it's not a single day effort, or it's not just a month or a week we are working for. We're going to work on this every single day, every minute, every year, till we leave on this planet Earth. So we will continue our effort on doing this good job for everyone, for ourselves, for our families, for our neighbors, and for everyone around us. And everyone might support from us as well. With this, we are at the end of our today's episode. It was great hearing from the both of you. It has inspired me a lot to work more in this sector. And I hope our listeners are also enjoying the session and also be motivated to work in the sectors in the days ahead and join us in this movement. Once again, thank you, Hita and Maxim, for sharing your valuable time with us.
Thank you, Preeti.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. As Dr. Jane Goodall once said that what you makes a difference, and you have to decide what kind of difference you want to make. Every small action of yours can make a big difference in your society, in your surroundings, in your families. So do think about it. We will be back with our next episode very shortly. Until then, stay safe, start acting green. Bye-bye. Keep listening to Radio and Youth Podcast.